Good morning, everyone. Thank you again to Henrik and Anna for this, for the invitation and for organizing this really interesting workshop. So I'm going to introduce the basics about the cell-based formalism, which is something a bit different to cellular automata. I'm going to start by briefly explaining what is cell-based and what's the relation with the depth formalism. Then I'm going to explain a couple of extra details about cell depth. And I'm going to introduce a tool that we have created to implement cell depth. And I'm going to do a bird's eye view of a large number of examples that we have done without going into the details of them, just to show the power of expression of the technique. We will end with advanced visualization facilities that we have been creating. So what's the basic idea of cell depth? We have a discrete event system specification organized as a cell space. So we have something that looks like a cellular automata. We have a grid like that, but each one of these is an independent entity. It's a discrete event atomic system in itself. And I'm going to explain the details about how it works in a few seconds. You define the behavior of each one of the cells, and then you define a neighborhood relationship, and then we construct a depth model combining all of the cells. This allows asynchronous execution through the inclusion of explicit delay functions on each one of the cells. And one of the interesting things is that it's based on this methodology called depth that I will explain on my next slide, which separates simulation from the model through an abstract simulation mechanism. So you can create different simulators for the same kind of models, and we have lot of experience doing that. So cell depth is derived from the depth modeling and simulation framework that was created by Bernie Siegler in the early 70s, and it's documented in his first book in 1976. Depth theory has evolved in the last 30 years, and depth stands for discrete event system specifications. It's a hierarchical and modular modeling technique that allows you to describe discrete event systems, that is, systems that react to events. You don't have a clock ticking. You don't know what time is it. You're going to see events, and you're going to react to those. Time is uses a continuous base. Time is a real number, and it's explicitly defined on each one of the models. It's a technique derived from generic dynamic systems formalisms, and it has started as a discrete events formalism, but the theory has evolved to include continuous systems and to formally describe discrete time systems too. The basic idea is that you have hierarchical models that are proven to be equivalent to non-hierarchical ones through a well-defined coupling of components definition. As a result, you can easily describe multi-resolution models and have things like multi-modeling using different techniques at different levels of abstraction to describe very complex models. And it's clearly the simulator that you use to make these models run is completely independent from the model itself, and it's completely independent from the experiments that you can do, so you can create repositories of models and repositories of experiments that are easily reusable. So how a depth model look like? You basically have two kinds of components. You have behavioral components which are called atomic models that are described by four functions over here and three sets. An atomic model is seen as a black box, okay? And it describes the behavior of the system as a black box. How is this described? It's very simple. The depth atomic model is always on a given state S, and you're going to be on that state S during the duration of that state. The duration of that state could be any real number between zero, and it could go up to infinity. If you have a model that has a delay of infinity, that model is passive, because that means that you're in this state forever. So when this time is consumed, what you're going to do is, first thing you're going to do is you're going to execute this output function. The output function takes the value of S and generates an output belonging to the X set, okay? Sorry, to the Y set. And the next thing that you're going to do is you're going to trigger this function called the internal transition function, which is going to take the current state S and is going to convert it into a new state, which is also associated with to a duration of the state, and you're going to start the cycle again. Okay? So this event, the event triggered by the time being elapsed, is called an internal event. While you're waiting for this time to be consumed, you could receive an external event, okay, from another model. So if this happens, what you're going to do is you're going to trigger what it's called the external transition function. This function is going to take the current value of the state, it's going to take the value of the input. If you see the lady, if we can replace the batteries, it's going to die any moment. So we are using, number one, the current state. We're going to use the external input. And a third value that you could use is the elapsed time since the last event. So a typical example that I give for this is we want to model people in this room. Okay. So what we're going to say is there's one speaking and there's 50 sitting. Okay. There's one coming through the door. So the input is the guy coming through the door, the current state, 50 people, one speaking. You can use the elapsed time to decide what to do also. It's a variable that you can use to take your decisions, and you could say, well, if there's still 15 minutes in this talk, I'm going to go in. But if it's only 5 minutes to go, I'm not going in. So this elapsed time variable can be used as a basis for this. Now, once you have created an atomic model, you can put it into a multi-component model, which is called a coupled model, which is defined by all of these sets. Number one, you also have inputs and outputs in your coupled model, and then you have a set of components, okay? Each one of them can be an atomic component or a coupled component, and you have three different sets of couplings. Internal couplings, which define the internal connections here, external input couplings that are going to tell, well, if you receive something from outside the model, where does it go? And external output couplings, which do the opposite. If you have, if you need to generate an output from the whole coupled model, where is it coming from and how is it connected to the outside? This theory has evolved in the last 30 years, as I said. A recent interesting advance is what's called quantized depth, in which you approximate a continuous function. Instead of doing discretization as it's traditionally done, what you do is discretize the state variables and you convert this continuous function into a discrete event function. And there has been a lot of work being done in the last few years with this. Thank you. There's also a large number of people who have been doing work in formalism transformation, and as you can see, there's a lot of arrows coming from different modeling techniques into DEF. The result of this is that you can do things like combining a cellular automata with a Petri net or a state charge in a seamless way, and we have done lots of things with this. Another interesting property is that this independence of modeling and simulation allows you to have a wide variety of models that you can run on different kinds of simulators. We have in our lab, single CPU, multi-CPU, real-time simulators on varied kind of middleware and varied kind of hardware. So from here up, nothing changes, okay? How about cell devs? Well, we use devs as a basis to build a cell space in which each one of these cells is going to be a special kind of atomic model, and the coupled model is going to be the whole cell space based on the neighborhood relationship. We have two basic types of atomic models. There are other more complex ones, but let's introduce these two briefly. Basically, you have your local transition function over here. As this is a modular system specification, you don't get to see what's the value of your neighbor unless your neighbor sends the value to you. So you have a set of inputs that you act on, okay? So you get your transition function to act on all of these inputs. In general, these inputs are coming from your neighbors, but it could come from another dev model somewhere else in the world. You are going to execute this local computing function, and you're going to decide if your state has changed. If it didn't change, your cell is going to sleep immediately, so you don't activate it unless you really need it. And so it becomes an asynchronous cell that whenever you receive an event, you're going to trigger the transition function, you're going to decide, did I change or not? Well, there was 40 people. Someone opened the door and closed the door. Did the state change? No. Do I need to do anything else with this classroom? No. Until someone else comes. So you're going to put the cell to sleep. Now, if the person came, we're going to say, well, the state of the cell should change, and it's going to be changing after, not immediately, but after a given delay. We have two kinds of delays, transport delays. Anything that happens in the transition function is going to be informed to your neighbors and to the outside of the cell after the delay. Inertial delays have preemptive semantics. The meaning of this is produce a cell's state change, and if the state change is not maintained during the duration of the delay, it can be preempted and you go back to your original state. Once you have defined the behavior of each one of the cells, you can create a couple more based on the neighborhood relationship. This is going to tell how the inputs and outputs are interconnected. And then you can put many different cellular models together by saying, well, an output on this cell should go as an input on this cell. And even you can put outputs of one cell to feed a traditional depth model, okay? We have built a tool called CD++ that's open source. It's publicly available. You can download it and use it for free. I have a community of users in which we have a built-in language that's following. It's just an implementation of the formal definitions of the n-dimensional cell depth formalism. We have defined a pretty big specification language with a wide variety of operators. And then if you are not satisfied with that, we provide you with a mechanism to write your own in C++. You can define n-dimensional zones. You can get an n-dimensional cell space, and you can say, well, I want this particular behavior in this area and this different behavior in another area, changing neighborhood shapes and rules that you execute. And we have included a wide of advanced techniques, including model state quantization, for approximating continuous functions on each one of the cells. The language looks more or less like this. You write the coupled model parameters, and then you define your atomic model as a set of rules in which you say this is a precondition for the rule, this is a postcondition of the rule, and this is a delay. You can put expressions on each one of them. If this precondition is true, you're going to change your state to this postcondition after this delay. This is how something like the life game would look. You say, well, I only have one component because you could have dozens of cell depths talking to each other and other depths in the same couple model specification. You say this is a cellular model, 20 by 20, with transport delays. The borders are wrapped. We have nine close neighbors, and these are the rules that we are executing. If this precondition is true, the state is going to change to one after 100 milliseconds, and as I said, you could put expressions everywhere. Now, let's run very quickly through a bunch of modern examples, okay? We have created over 200 different that are available for public use in different areas. We have models on biology and medicine, crowds and evacuation, environmental sciences, physics and chemistry. We have a bunch of artificial systems and a fully featured language for urban traffic. Let's show a couple of examples on biology. So we have been working with people at the biology department at Carleton, and they are doing research on reaction of synapsin and vesicles. Synapsin is a protein that you have in neurons that inhibits the release of neurotransmitter, and they are interested in using this because this might be one of the causes for Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer. And they want to study very seriously. They have their electron microscope, and they see how the synapses and vesicles interact with each other. The traditional way of modeling this is through Gillespie's equations, but they needed something more visual, and they want to expand it into 3D visualization, and the tools that they have right now are not good for that. So what we did is we created a cell depth model. I'm going to just to show execution results, but basically what you do over here is you create a cell space with different kinds of neighborhoods for experimentation in which you study how the synapsin gets bound to vesicles, And according to an on rate or off rate that we use for experimentation, that they get the binding or they get released. These are preliminary results, are very recent, but they were extremely pleased because they can now do some serious experimentation with to try to match the results that they see on the synapsin. Something else that we have done in biology is something similar to the heart. The heart model that was presented a couple of days ago, but this the goal was a bit different. We took Hawking-Huxley equations for cells in the atria. The function looks more or less like this, and we want to improve performance of execution through cell depth quantization. So what we are able to do is, instead of converting this as a cellular automata using some artificial artifacts by saying, well, I have a spike here, and I have a transient period here, and then I have a decay, and then I start again, and I convert the real function into four states. I quantize the function using a determined, given quantum size. I don't lose the precision of the function if I need it, and then I still get a lot of improvement in execution time, and I can put thousands of cells together. In artificial systems, we have done some work in robot path planning based on the works of CNAS, and the idea here is that our cell-based model will first check the configuration of the obstacles, and then it will check different kinds of edges, and then it on each one of them will say, well, this edge has this shape, this edge has another shape, and we'll start expanding this set of rules until you get these intersections. When you get the intersections, you will get a Voronoi diagram that will tell you what's the shortest path. Something else that we are working right now with a colleague in my department, he's trying to do actual swarming robots, okay, that they're similar robots that they get together to do a common task. So what we have done is a simulation of this. We have a couple of results for square or hexagonal lattices. Something else that we do in artificial systems, we've been working with some guys in my department that's heavily involved with communication techniques. We have done ad hoc on-demand distance vector simulation of this protocol, okay, which is widely used for wireless communications. So the idea here is that you have a source and a destination, and they want to talk to each other, and then you have some obstacles. So this basic algorithm by Lee, what it's doing, it's you communicate with your neighboring cells, and you try to find the shortest path through a request message. So you spread the request message, trying to find a backward path, and then you pick the shortest one. We have done a bunch of tests about this. So this is a cell space in which I have the cells here, the destination over there. We start flooding the cell space until the destination is found, and we start finding the traceback route. And everything that is detected not to be in the shortest path, then it becomes not part of the communication path. We have done an extension of this in 3D. So what's the idea here? Well, you could use it for wireless communication in cities like New York, or for communicating in planes and helicopters. But the real application of this is you could think about each one of the layers as a different network. So if you can do internet working through this, you could say, well, I'm here in a wireless net, but I see that the shortest path to this destination is through this wire network, that it's communicating through this wire network, and it finds the shortest path. We also expanded this to do optimal multicast trees, in which, well, if you have the communication established already and someone else wants to join, you find the optimal tree for the multicast communication. And we also have a multidimensional model to say, well, these guys are walking around. This is the model of the nodes, and this is the model of people working in the area without collision. So according to who is where, you can find the coverage area for your wireless network. We have done a bunch of experiments in physics and chemistry, ranging from heat spreading and binary solidification. The most interesting one, we have done this with the chemistry department in the University of Buenos Aires, because I have friends over there. They were trying to do this experiment that was very expensive, in which they want to see how a carrier and reagent mix with each other, and every time that they needed to buy the reagent, it was very expensive, so they started building a model over using traditional techniques, and we did a cell-based model of that, that makes the convective transport that happens in this way with the radial diffusion that happens from the edges to the center. This, well, I have a simple animation of this. So the idea is that you put the reagent and the carrier, and this peristaltic pump opens a gate and they start mixing, and they are using this for doing actual experimentation. We have a bunch of models in environmental sciences. The simplest ones are traditional ant foraging models, and we have done we have used Stefania's job for vegetation dynamics, and the idea here is that you put different nutrients on different planes and you have a diffusion model on each one of the planes, and in one of them you will have your trees growing and seeds being put into the ground when reproduction time comes. So as you will see, we will have the diffusion of the different nutrients and water, and well, we will also see how sun is affecting the system, and you will see the trees growing, and eventually you get seeds spread in the area. We have a model on watershed formation in which what you have is you get your vegetation cover and different slope of the terrain, and it's a cell-depth model in which according to the level of water you get flooding or not. And we have done extensive studies about this. And we have done a lot of work in forest fires. So based on the Rothermel model on a semi-empirical model that a colleague of mine of the University of Corsica have been using. So I will run through the rest because I have 5 minutes, right? More or less. Three, four, well, anyway. I have 3 minutes for 40 slides, then I'll start. You will see me talking quickly. So we have done this, we have created this high-level specification language, which is called Atlas. Atlas looks like this, okay? So you say, this is a street, this is where it starts, this is where it ends, okay? So we have done, first step of this project was, let's do a formal mapping between this mathematical language into cell-based mathematical language. And then we have a mapping between the formal specification of cell-based and CD++. So we built a compiler for Atlas that translates into CD++. We created a graphical interface. CD++ runs in different simulation environments. So you start with something like this, in which you have streets of different number of lanes on different directions, and then you have decorations like potholes or job sites or traffic signs. You have connectors which are crossings. And then we have our language that looks like this, which is translated in something that looks like that, which is CD++, and this can run on my simulator. We have a GUI in such a way that instead of typing the shape of your city, you can draw the shape of your city. Next step is to integrate a GIS system into this, and you can put decorations in your map. We have been doing recently work on crowds and evacuation. We have this model has two layers. In one of them, you have what's your shortest path to the exit, and on the other one, you have people running away. So here you will see this is actually the Society of Art and Technology in Montreal. We've been working with them. This is the shortest path map, and you have people around, and there's an emergency situation. There's usually not many people in this thing, which is a pub with art exhibitions, and well, we have done a wide variety of tests, and eventually they run away. We have included panic behavior, in which people get panicked when they see that the exit is blocked, and they started running away. And we have been working on advanced methodologies, ranging from an eclipse-based environment up to the use of this in embedded systems development. We are building a small robot. That includes cell devs for routing. We have a parallel simulator that's based on different kinds of middleware running in our cluster at Carlton. We have a parallel simulation engine, and the same models that we have created for my laptop runs in the parallel engine. And the idea here is that we will be able to have complex models like the fire spreading model with a real-time engine that we could create something like an automated UAV to put off the fire, and we could create the controller of the UAV as a death mode and do experimentation in the lab before deploying it into the actual helicopter. We've been doing some work in distributed simulation of through using the CEA network infrastructure. We have our power simulator over here, and we collaborate with a group of architects at Carlton, and they do rendering and visualization. So what's the whole idea here? They have pretty fancy 3D stuff that I will show in a second. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to put self-dev modes integrated with our architectural reconstruction. They have a collaborative, long-distance collaborative environment using CANET4. This was a demo that they did. They constructed a whole building during IGRID 2005. Some of them were in Ottawa, some of them were in La Jolla, and they have this collaborative environment. And what we did is we put our dev simulator doing distributed tests. So this is our fire model running between Ottawa and Montreal. This is what would take through the commodity internet, and this is what it would take on a single computer, and this is what it took through CANET4. We have, to end with, we have developed a bunch of visualization engines, okay? So this one is online, anyone can use it, it's based on VRML. It's outdated because VRML, no one is supporting it anymore. But if you go to my website, you are able to play with this 3D visualization. We did something for the traffic modeling engine, and we have an open source viewing tool that you can use for visualization of cellular automata. Well, can we turn off the light? So, I think, well, it's pretty dark. So, but the next ones are more interesting, and they are dark too. But this is open source. You can use it for visualizing your models in 3D. We have done a lot of work with Maya, which is a product by Autodesk. Because the architects that we collaborate with have lots of licenses for Maya. It's a very expensive product, but we can do very quickly fancy stuff like this. So this is a maze-solving algorithm that we have in CellDev, and we have done integration between Maya and our simulator, so that if you want to do animations and 3D visualization, you can do it very quickly. This is the evacuation visualization of the evacuation model that I had before. I'm not going to show this one. And we have extended it. This is the house of one of my students, and they have put our self-dev visualization, evacuation model, and, done visualization. What's going on? It's hibernating. Well, I had a couple of extra nice pictures, but I'm out of time anyway. So I will show you, if anyone wants to see even fancier stuff, I will show you during the break, okay? Yeah, sorry about this.
You mentioned you have done some work on robot path planning. Have you done any work on unknown territory coverage?
No, not yet. We are just starting to work with my colleague. He's a member of the robotics lab, and what he's trying to do is he's working on swarm intelligence.